Jesuit professor Father Felix Körner is a scholar. His expertise is Islam, something he has first-hand experience of, grounded in the 6 years in which he lived in a Muslim nation, Turkey. There he spent much of his time in dialogue with Muslim theologians in an effort to build bridges between Christians and Muslims, to work towards reconciliation and improve mutual understanding. So today, when Professor Körner teaches Theology of Religions at the Faculty of Theology at the Jesuit-run Pontifical Gregorian University here in Rome, he continues to draw inspiration from this personal experience in interreligious dialogue, while clearly placing Christian and Catholic identity at the heart of his teaching. He also encourages students to grow in the awareness that there is to learn from other religions as well. I went round to call on him ahead of the forthcoming 27th of October Pilgrims of Truth, Pilgrims of Peace meeting in Assisi, which brings together around Pope Benedict XVI some 300 representatives of other religions for a day of reflection, dialogue, and prayer for peace and justice in the world. A commemoration, a quarter of a century on, of that first historic 1986 meeting called by Blessed John Paul II, when representatives of other religions gathered to pray together for justice and peace. So when I heard that praying together was not something that was going to happen this time round, I wondered why, and to dispel all doubts regarding this matter, I asked Father Körner if this might imply there's a problem with joint prayer. Stay tuned and listen to what he replied.
We cannot say 25 years ago religions prayed together and now they don't. The motto of the 1986 Assisi Prayer Day was, we do not come to pray together, we come together to pray. That is a significant distinction. It meant already then there was a feeling that it would be wrong if we would recite texts together and play as if all religions were in fact one Esperanto religion, one union. No, there is religious diversity, and the 1986 event was clear about that. But if you want to understand what has been going on in the last 50 years of church relationship to other religions, we can see more clearly what will be happening now in Assisi. Let me just present this in a short way. 50 years ago, the Second Vatican Council was formulating the Catholic Church's attitude towards other religions.
It's a great breakthrough.
It was, indeed. And I would name the breakthrough as realizing the theological challenge and possibility. It was a moment of realizing that there's so much to be learned, so much to be said, so much to be discovered. So the first step was really realization.
It was under Paul VI, because it was John XXIII who called the council, but it was under Paul VI that this happened, no?
Exactly. I link the word even of realizing very much with Paul VI. Now, under John Paul II, the church could quite organically take a next step, also because the vocation of that pope, the charism of that man, was very relational. So the motto after realizing was relating, finding good relationships, even building up friendships. I remember very well when John Paul II died, I talked to a taxi driver in Ankara, Turkey, and asked him, do you know why today even Turkish state buildings are flagged on half mast? He answered, yes, of course, it's the Pope's funeral today, and we all loved him. So even that Turkish Muslim taxi driver knew who he was and liked him. Realizing and then relating. Now, another Pope with another charism, and therefore also with another vocation, is the leader and representative of the Catholic Church, Benedict XVI. His new contribution and the organic next step he's taking is reflecting. After realizing, after building good relationships, after having friendships, after having already invited experts, now we can use these chances and these groups for going deeper, for reflecting. So for me, it is not surprising that in the title of the 2011 Assisi Day, there is not only the word prayer, there's also the word reflection. Now, reflection also leads us to understanding more deeply what prayer really is. The Christian theology of prayer, the Christian experience of prayer, is very much centered around human being in his or her weakness. Once Karl Rahner was asked by a journalist when he was already an old man, "Father Rahner, do you actually pray?" And Father Rahner's answer was, "I hope that I pray." I think it's very wise what he said there. What I'm doing, what I'm living, what I'm saying, what I'm orienting towards God, I hope that this is prayer. We cannot take for granted that we are in communion with God. But our hope is based on Christ. Christian prayer is uniting ourselves with Christ, speaking the Psalms with Him, feeling our life's hope and suffering with Him, entering more and more deeply into the dynamics of what we call the Paschal Mystery, entering into the dynamics of dying and rising. So, Christians would say always, we cannot pray out of our own force. An act of God is needed. His election, His grace, His transformation is necessary for us to be able to be really in communion with God, the Heavenly Father. And therefore, when Christians pray, they also want to witness to the great grace, the non-naturality, the non-grantedness, the fact that it is not automatic that everybody can pray. And therefore, it is good that when we have public prayers in the presence of members of other religions, that it becomes clear that our status, our justification to pray, is through Christ. We can, if members of other religions are there, have beautiful inspirations from their texts, from their gestures, from their search, from their life witnesses.
A different level.
But that is a different level, exactly. Yeah. So I think when we reflect, a Christian would always say, we cannot take for granted, let's come together and pray together. And we didn't say this in 1986, and we are not saying this in 2011. Our experience, our friendships have grown, and therefore we can also very clearly witness our common search and our difference in tradition and faith contents.
Now we've spoken about prayer. This meeting in Assisi is the first time non-believers have been included. How do you view this step?
We have always said Benedict will be a pope of truth. Everybody sees that we are right. But Benedict is giving also a shape to what Christians mean by truth that is very new and very surprising. Benedict doesn't say, we have a number of formulations of truth and that is it. But we are called to appropriate, to understand and to re-express what the gift of Christ's truth is in every generation and also in every moment of our lives. So we have now this beautiful expression that we are pilgrims of truth and justice. Pilgrims are people that go beyond. That's actually the original meaning of the word. The persons who go per ager, who go beyond the outskirts of Rome. That's the original meaning. So pilgrim, people who go beyond what they have already. Benedict would never say all the theological formulations the church has are enough. No, we have to dig deeper. We have to formulate it more precisely today. We have to look for new ways of expressing the gospel. And for that search in pilgrimage for truth, we need the questions of the others. We need the dialogue with people of different faith and of no faith so far. If we make a group of the believers, that can very easily become a new ghetto of those for whom everything is clear. And that would not be a truthful attitude. Truth remains always, especially when you have got a feeling for the gift of Christ's truth. Truth remains always a pilgrimage, an encounter with the mystery that invites you to dig more and more deeply, to look better and better, to understand ever anew.
In other words, dialogue is very important. It leads towards justice and peace in the world.
And actually, it also leads to a clearer understanding of truth. But surely, dialogue is an important instrument for people's mutual understanding. Understanding not only in the sense of I see what you mean, but also we can reach formula of agreement in very concrete questions. For example, we have many Muslims living in European societies now who want their dead to be buried without coffins. That creates difficulties with the authorities that want to protect the groundwater. And then we need to reach an understanding in the sense of find a good practical solution for that. But in order to reach that, we need to talk with them and we need to find a fair solution out of a dialogue. And such solutions are possible and that such solutions have been found now. So dialogue as a way towards peace and justice, certainly, but a dialogue also that helps us discover more deeply what our faith is really about.